Well, yeah.
No, that's not to be dismissive.
No. Also,
it's just like, God, it's yes just and
yes.
the worst.
Yes and yes.
Yeah.
Yes and also yes.
Oh, yes and also yes. Episode name.
Yes and also, I mean, maybe. I don't really think there's anything super hilarious in here that I could use.
I mean, both of you had bummers. Hers, God damn. Oh. Did you listen?
No, but holy, I know the story.
Fuck, dude.
I do know the story. And I really hate it.
Yeah, it was very, very upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're here.
We are here.
We're alive.
Yeah.
Oh, my hand is reflecting against that box. So when I move it, it flickers.
Oh.
So it's like, it's catching my eye. Anyway. Welcome to Ghosts and Hoes, everybody.
Oh, Ghosts and Hoes.
Ghosts and Hoes, paranormal podcast. I have to do this part
you
now.
You do have to do it.
Paranormal podcast, where we talk about all things spoopy.
Yeah.
Cryptids.
Sometimes.
Witchcraft.
Yeah. Aliens.
Aliens. Yeah. Murder most motherfucking foul.
Generally, always.
And that one time. Haunted bunk beds. Ha!
Oh, thank you. You did. You did. I appreciate the switch up. I appreciate the switch up. Oh, haunted bunk beds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What I wouldn't give.
I know.
I mean,
I know.
I was going to say, I don't know if I'd give anything to have a haunted bunk bed, but also I know myself, and that's not entirely the truth. I probably would. If somebody was like, hey, will you take these haunted bunk beds off of my hands? I'd be like,
yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah, I want to see them. I want to experience these.
Definitely, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Speaking of haunted bunk beds, I did something today. And I need the world to know, because
I'm a little concerned about where this is going.
I told you earlier.
Oh, that. Okay.
Cuz I like to say the stuff, you know, when I do the things. I saw a movie. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
I subjected myself.
You did.
To the new Exorcist movie.
No spoilers.
Exorcist Believer. I'm not going to spoil. Anything that comes close to a spoiler is not going to be... It's not... I mean, it is an Exorcist movie. We know there are two possessed girls. We know there's an exorcism.
Yeah.
So, beyond those two points, there are some things that I could tell you that would be a little bit of a spoiler. But we all know. But I am going to say a couple of things that are a little deeper into the plot than you may want to know. So skip forward like 2 minutes. I was so upset.
See, I feel like this for you is how I felt about Halloween.
Well, you didn't think Halloween was absolutely stunning halfway through.
That is true.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
This movie... Like, all of the reviews say, you know, it doesn't match the tone.
Mm-hmm.
It just shits on the original. Ellen Burstyn is a gimmick more than anything else. So on and so forth. So, about halfway through is when she shows up.
Okay.
And the first three scenes that she is in are good.
Okay.
But she's kind of like ghost cop, you know? That's kind of the role they give her. Yeah, exactly.
I wish you guys could see what he did with his arms and body when he said ghost cop. It was great.
It was finger guns, but like full hand palm.
It was like a robot, like robot arms.
Yeah.
Like cartoon robot arms.
Yeah.
Ghost cop. Yeah. That's like, going to have to be a thing now.
Chris McNeil, ghost cop.
That's a thing.
Right?
Done and ghost cop.
The scares were fantastic.
Excellent.
It's really fucking scary for the first half. And they do such a good job of building tension and suspense. Mm-hmm. And then something happens.
Okay.
And then Chris McNeil gives this like 3-minute monologue on faith. And that's when I knew. I was like, okay, we're getting to the part where people didn't like it anymore.
Ah.
I could feel it in the way... The pacing of it,
the tone of it.
You can watch the main character. Because the one of the big themes with the Exorcist movies, specifically the good ones, which are the first one, the third one, and Dominion, the prequel, are that the main character is having a struggle with faith.
Yeah.
Whether it's Chris McNeil, where she isn't religious, but this thing happens and she is forced to deal with it.
Yeah.
Or it's like Exorcist 3, where this dude... knows it's happening,
yeah,
but is still kind of apprehensive to buy into it.
Yeah. I'm reading that book right now, actually.
Is it good?
It's written a little weirdly.
Okay.
Because a lot of it is written from the old cop's perspective, like his internal monologue, and it's a little weird and scattered because he as a character, at least in the book,
uh-huh,
is weird and scattered. And so I'm just like, I have to remember what is happening.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
going on? I've actually never finished The Exorcist 3.
Oh, the movie?
Yeah. I don't know why.
It's great.
I fall asleep every single time. But I think that's because every time I've tried to watch it, I've actually been sick. Which is on me. That's okay. on me. It's not nothing against the movie. It's just
Brad
me.
Brad Dourif, man. Holy shit.
He's just put him in all the
things. I know. He should be. Good. Like, he's masterful in that movie. But
yes. But your overall consensus.
I have a really hard time putting a firm, like, rating on it, but the thing that's so disappointing is when you watch, so, like, you and I,
mm-hmm,
occasionally,
yeah,
love to watch,
yeah,
just a shit movie.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, especially me on my own all the time.
Right.
One of my favorite things.
But you pick a movie that is so bad it's entertaining.
Yes.
Right?
That's my bread and butter.
And then
it's my toast and jam.
Right. And then beyond that, there are movies that are not entertaining. They are so bad, but they are not entertaining. They are just bad.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a disappointment.
That's like the one you made me watch, the Texas Chainsaw.
Oh, God.
Recent one.
Jesus.
That was not even
Christ.
Entertaining.
No,
that was just maddening. Infuriating.
Although watching a bunch of influencers getting chainsawed.
That was
a redeeming scene.
Literally the only
That's
one.
It. No, I agree with you.
Even then.
I agree with
it
you.
It could not save.
It was awful. That movie was awful.
It could not save Hee Haw Leatherface Edition.
Right.
I will never forget that. It was just.
No, that movie
what?
Is trash.
It was bad.
And that goes, for me, movies like that are disappointing.
Yes.
Right? Because there is no redeeming quality.
There was not.
But when a movie is, like, superb,
mm-hmm,
and then halfway through turns on a dime and just not only shits the bed, but paints the walls, it's so frustrating.
I've changed what I... It's not Halloween. The way you feel about this is the way I feel about Scream 4. Right? Except instead of disappointment on my end was anger, but...
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's frustrating and it's angering.
Yeah.
Because, like, you just spent half this movie getting attached to the characters, mm-hmm, and buying into the plot and just being super engaged.
And they're like, ha-ha.
Yeah. And then it's... Like, the turn they take is so unbelievably fucking bad. Like, she gives that monologue on faith, and then the dad, the main character, mm-hmm, just believes in God.
Well, that's sudden.
Yeah, he's just in.
Huh.
Because he has, no pun intended, exercised all of his options, and then is given
the other one.
Right. Then is given a book written by Chris McNeil, and then goes to find her. He's like, oh, this is my only option.
Okay.
So, and he's like staunchly atheist.
Okay.
Which is a change from the rest of the universe.
Yeah.
They're not staunchly atheists. They're either skeptical, mm-hmm, or they are questioning, like in Dominion. That's, mm-hmm, Marin's whole game. So, yeah. In the exorcism scene, and this is not spoiling anything, in the exorcism scene, the way that they write this movie grants them the ability to have people from different faiths,
mm-hmm,
bring in their versions of exorcism,
okay,
and do them all at the same time.
I don't know if that's how that works.
No,
but
it's not.
I mean, hey, maybe I haven't seen it. But maybe the thought process was like, they're so fucking possessed, we're just going to throw everything at it and see what helps, if anything.
Which, like, I get that, but the result ended up being, like, this clunky, confusing mess.
Oh.
And then, like, Catholicism finally makes its way in, and then, like, the demons have the automatic, like, oh, fuck, kind of response to it. And it's like, okay, cool. So this movie is for Christians.
Okay.
They wrote this movie to appeal to a Christian audience.
It sounds like a condensed Ryan Murphy American Horror Story, where it's like, starts out strong, and then the end,
we were so upset. And the funny part, we saw a noon screening at the Eastport, mm-hmm. and we were literally the only three people there. So we got to be as loud as we wanted. And like when she delivered that monologue, I just turned to them. I went, I think it's starting.
I think
we're about to see it happen.
It's crappening. Like,
yeah.
It's crappening.
Yeah.
Well, I still have to see it.
The other thing too, like it's so beautifully shot.
I could tell from the trailer that it was going to be visually stunning.
Visually, it is incredible, but that even takes a turn.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, the whole thing, it's like Danny McBride and David Gordon Green handed it off to two completely different people and just kind of gave them a brief summary of what they wrote so far. It's like, now you finish it.
Here are three Post-its.
Yeah, exactly.
We just picked them out of a hat. Any three Post-its. Here you go. Uh-huh. Go.
And yeah, I will give them that. The kids/teenagers who play the possessed girls mm-hmm. are amazing.
Okay.
They're absolutely incredible.
Yeah,
whoever is voicing the demon, perfect.
I'm going to maybe see it this weekend. I don't know yet.
Sure.
Depends on how I feel. Mm-hmm. But I'll report back.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what you think.
As I've said many times before, The Exorcist is the one movie that just I can't watch all the time.
Mm.
And I can't do it. Because the book scared me
uh-huh.
so terribly as a youth.
I think I've only seen it three, maybe four times all the way through.
I definitely saw that movie way too young.
I would say kind of same. And I saw the director's cut, too, so...
Yeah. No, I saw that in theaters, but I'd already seen
the
original release
uh-huh.
when I was, like, eight.
Okay.
Seven or eight, maybe. Creeped me out.
Yeah.
But... And then I can't remember if I saw the director's cut with the spider crab stairs.
Sure.
Nope. Hate that. really hated that in the theater with my friend.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember how old... Because it was one of the, like... anniversary releases.
Oh, sure.
Which one? Don't remember.
Uh-huh.
But at some point, either I had seen both versions of the movie or it was in between was when I read the book on vacation. And I left it under the hotel bed because I did not want to take it home.
Okay.
Because I'm like, no, thank you. No, thanks. Because it wasn't the like content of the book per se. Like it was definitely, yeah, fucking scary, but it was the bibliography in the back of the book of the research of actual exorcisms
right.
stuff like that. And I was like, oh no, you made it too real.
Yeah.
Because I was a youth and didn't really know about that.
Right.
And then I was like, oh no.
I hate
it. And that's why I had to leave it under the hotel room bed.
For me, it was in the director's cut the first time you see the demon's face.
Don't love that either.
Fucked me up for a while.
That is fair.
To the point where I know exactly the moment it happens, and I just close my eyes when it does, because I don't want to see it again.
Fair. I know that everybody hates Heretic, the second Exorcist.
Yeah.
It's fucking hilarious now, but the first time I watched it, I think I was by myself, and it was on TV, which, you know, made it even more hilarious.
Yeah.
But it was the scenes where they would cut to, like, James Earl Jones, and it's the singing that they do. Yeah. I hate, ever since that movie, I saw it, anytime I hear something like that, I'm like, no, fuck you. Stop it. I do not love, fuck off forever and always so hard. Like the theme to, what's that fucking show? White Lotus?
Oh, sure.
Fucking hard pass.
Yeah, hard pass.
You get fucked. No. Shining Vale. Love that show, by the way. That is similar, and every time I'm like, nope. I hate this. Yeah. I hate it so much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's the one thing that scarred me from watching Heretic was that.
And everything else was just, fuck you. And
everything actually, else was just silly.
I will say this, and we can get into the rest of the show.
Great. I'm so ready.
The very last scene, when it happened.
In Heretic?
No, in the new one. The very last scene, and I won't spoil that because that is a big moment.
Please don't. I mean, it's the last scene of a movie. Why?
Out loud, just fuck you! And then it ended. And yeah.
Well, glad we talked about that for 45 minutes.
15. Calm down.
I was close enough.
Do we have any backups?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Let's hit it to it.
Hang on. Well, I gotta find them first.
Sure.
First, a shout out to our new patron, Jen.
What's up, Jen?
Hey, friend.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah. Next.
Stuff's in the mail, I'm assuming.
Well, it would be, except my mail carrier did not take the mail today for some reason.
Dick!
Whenever that happens, I just assume it's because my normal mail carrier is out.
Ah, sure.
Because he's always on top of things. Just like, come on, man.
Well, okay, so it'll be in the mail tomorrow. For you, it was mailed yesterday.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't.
Very likely.
I don't know.
You'll find out soon.
R.I.P. Suzanne Summers and Piper Laurie.
I didn't know Suzanne Summers died.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and Piper Laurie.
Where do I know her?
They're all going to laugh at you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fucking Piper Laurie.
That's right.
Carrie. Return to Oz. Twin Peaks.
Yeah. Okay.
God bless them. And this won't mean anything to you, probably, but Gypsy Rose Blanchard is scheduled to be released from prison in December.
Who is that?
Well... Did you?
We're going to do a back-to-back episode today, everybody.
Truly, no. Absolutely not. Did you ever see the Hulu original with Patricia Arquette and Joey King, played mother and daughter?
No.
Well, based on a true story.
Okay.
Her story. The TLDR version, her mom had Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Okay.
Convinced everybody that her daughter, Gypsy Rose, was very ill. Guess what?
Twasn't.
No. And so then she found out and convinced her boyfriend to help her kill her mom.
Oh.
Basically. Okay. That is like the rawest version of it. There's clearly much more to it.
Yes.
They both went to jail.
Uh-huh.
And she is getting out in a couple months.
Okay.
The 28th of December.
How long ago did this happen?
Don't ask me questions like that right now.
Okay.
I don't remember. It's been a while. I just don't remember the exact number. I do not remember the exact number. But yeah, so that's a thing that's happening.
All
right. Also, we've got a membership request for the Fuck You Club.
Oh.
Yes, and I can say without a doubt, he belongs there.
Okay.
So, keep it for later.
Okay.
But fuck you, Steven. Fuck you.
And we'll
Steven.
Appropriately induct him.
Yes.
Shortly.
Yes. Yes, we will.
Yeah.
And this is an exciting new addition.
Huh?
Hey guys, did you ever want to have some shirts or something?
Oh shit!
Because guess what?
I've been literally talking about this for years.
Literally years. You can get them now. You go to Redbubble and search our name, and there's some shirts.
Go buy them.
And you can also put some of the things on other stuff.
Uh-huh.
A shower curtain, maybe?
Oh, so you, that's right.
A tote bag?
Yep.
A clock? I don't know. They're up there. You make your choices.
Uh-huh. Is it this?
Is it what?
Is it that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's on there. Very cool. Basquatch and the Trick Babies is up there. That's going to be really fucking cool. But yeah, so fucking finally. Here you go.
F&A Cotton.
F&A Cotton, indeed.
Yeah.
F&A Cotton, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Glad that that's a thing now.
Yeah. So fucking go buy some stuff.
Yeah.
Because you can now.
Go buy some stuff.
Finally. There was also like leggings?
Sure.
Those ones, it was an option, but I was like, no. No. No.
That's such a weird.
Yeah, skirt.
Skirt, sure.
There was like a tunic dress.
Okay.
I was like, what is Redbubble? what all is this? They're like, do you want coasters? I'm like, fucking someone might. I don't know. So, yeah.
Well, shit. Fuck, fire, and hell. Is that what she says?
Yeah, it is indeed.
Who goes first? You do, because D's not here.
Exactly. Who goes first? Me, and only me. But yeah. Yeah. So let's fucking...
Am I going to be mad, sad, or what?
Maybe a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit of all of it.
Okay.
Yeah, because remember 2 weeks ago now when I said I only had one backhoe because it turned out my whole story was kind of a backhoe?
Yes.
In the words of modern day philosopher Britney Jean Spears, oops, I did it again. You're welcome. You're welcome. I just need everybody to know that if we both sound insane, it's because it is
currently
10:30.
10:36
at night.
I just got done with the show. You work today.
I did.
It's
so
yeah. It's gonna be a weird one.
Let's fucking get weird. It's because it's gonna be.
And it might be long. You guys might be here for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Not incorrect. So yeah. I intentionally left this off of my backhoes a couple weeks ago. And I was a little bit surprised that neither of you mentioned it. But I'm not really that surprised, only a little bit.
Okay.
But I assumed that Danielle's boy child would have said something to her about it.
Okay.
But in any event, today is the day that I'm going to tell y'all about the life and untimely death of the one and only Tupac motherfucking Shakur.
Oof.
Yeah. Did you... My shirt.
Yeah, I see. You're wearing your Tupac shirt.
I am.
This is going to be a wild ride.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, this is going to be nuts.
You're not fucking wrong.
There's a lot.
Yeah, which is also why I'm real glad I had a whole extra week.
Yeah.
Because, oh boy.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Let's get it.
Yeah, let's do it.
But first, a little history about his mother. A political activist and one-time member of the Black Panthers, Afeni Shakur, and what was going on in her world not terribly long before he was born. And I could literally talk about her for hours on her own, but I won't. I will refrain.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have things to do.
I have sleep to sleep. I have sleep to use.
Uh-huh.
I need to use the sleep. But I will rein myself in, but it is relevant. So.
Okay.
In 1969, Afeni and 20 other members of the Black Panthers, who would later be referred to as the Panther 21, they were arrested on multiple charges, including conspiracy to, quote, shoot police officers and bomb police stations, railroad tracks, Manhattan department stores, and the New York Botanical Garden in the Bronx. Afeni was held in the Women's House of Detention in Manhattan and was ultimately released on bail in January of 1970. In any event, at this time, she was married to Harlem Black Panther leader Lumumba Shakur. Before the trial of the Panther 21, Lumumba tried to dissuade the 23-year-old Afeni from acting as her own attorney, telling her, amongst other gems, that she would, quote, fuck everything up.
Okay.
Now, it was true that she had absolutely zero legal expertise and was certainly lacking the credentials, but she could hold her own and would eventually very effectively defend herself during the trial. But before that, while out on bail, she sowed some wild oats, you know, just in case she did end up going to prison for the rest of her life and never saw her relatively new husband again. I think they'd been married for maybe a year when this all happened. So at some point while she was out on bail, she went to Jersey to lay low and ended up having an affair with fellow Black Panther member Billy Garland, which would result in her pregnancy. Despite the fact that both Afeni and Billy were married to other people and that Billy already had other children, Afeni decided to keep the baby. After learning that she was pregnant, Afeni would go on to spend the remainder of her pregnancy back at the New York Women's House of Detention while awaiting trial. Of this time, she would share that, quote, "It's funny, because I never believed he would live. I had a million miscarriages, you know. This child stayed in my womb through the worst possible conditions. I had to get a court order to get an egg to eat every day. I had to get a court order to get a glass of milk every day. You know what I'm saying? I lost weight, but he gained weight. He was born 1 month and 3 days after we were acquitted. I had not been able to carry a child. Then this child comes and hangs on and really fights for his life." End quote.
Wow.
Yeah, she literally, the conditions at this detention center were horrific. And she literally had to file a court order to get extra food.
That's fucking wild.
As a pregnant woman.
That's wild.
And they gave her one glass of milk a day and one hard-boiled egg. That's what they were like, yeah, okay, here you go. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So, that's fucked. After an 8-month-long trial, which was the longest and most expensive trial in New York City at the time, Afeni and the rest of the Panther 21 were acquitted of all charges in May of 1971, thanks in large part to Afeni exposing the fact that at least three undercover agents had actually been responsible for organizing the majority of the criminal activities.
Damn.
Yes. The devil is...
in your throat.
In my chest, actually. But yes, I could also talk about the Black Panthers for an eternity.
And I imagine at some point you will.
Today,
no.
Shockingly, no. Only a little bit. But my favorite professor in college was actually a former Black Panther.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So that was also fucking rad. Anyway, after they were acquitted, Afeni chose not to return to the Black Panther Party. And her marriage to Lumumba also effectively ended when he learned of her pregnancy. For he was in prison, awaiting trial, when she got pregnant. She was out on bail, and then bail got revoked. And, yeah, so he was like, no.
Yeah.
Whoops. Yeah. A month after the trial was over, 24-year-old Afeni gave birth to her son, Lassane Parrish Crooks, in Harlem on June 16th, 1971. When he was a year old, his mother changed his name to Tupac Amaru Shakur after Peruvian revolutionary Tupac Amaru II.
Okay.
It means, Tupac means shining serpent.
Ah.
Of the change, Afeni said, quote, "I wanted him to have the name of revolutionary indigenous people in the world. I wanted him to know he was part of a world culture and not just from a neighborhood."
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. In 1975, Afeni married Mutulu Shakur, brother of political activist Asada Shakur, who was also Tupac's godmother. The Shakur, no relation. It was just a chosen name.
Sure.
So, a lot of the people have the same last name, not necessarily related. It was like Malcolm X going by X.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, this is my new name. Which, again, I could...
like, for instance, Tina Fey and I, not related.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Spelled different, yeah, but still, yes. It's the other one.
Yeah.
Homonym every time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. Mutulu Shakur was also the father to Tupac's older stepbrother, Maurice Harding, a.k.a. Moprim Komani Shakur, who would form the group Thug Life with his stepbrother in 1993 and would appear on at least one of Tupac's singles, Papa's Song. from his second album. Later that same year, 75, Afeni would give birth to their daughter, Sakiwa Set Shakur. She goes by Set. At the time, Afeni worked as a paralegal while the family moved around Harlem and the Bronx. In 1982, Afeni and Mutulu got divorced, which was around the time she began using crack cocaine. Which is another whole fucking story.
Oh, there's so much goddamn about that. Oh, that's that. If we ever cover, oh, we're going to be so mad. Oh, we're going to be so mad.
I know. So while she had trouble holding down jobs and was supporting her kids via welfare, she also enrolled her son in the 127th Street Ensemble, which was a Harlem-based theater troupe for kids, where he would excel. In fact, when he was 12 or 13, he played Travis in A Raisin in the Sun, which was performed at the Apollo Theater for one of Jesse Jackson's fundraisers.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. In an interview with writer William Shaw, Tupac shared that he was often teased by the other kids for his name. They would call him stuff like tube sock, tuberculosis, just bullshit kid stuff.
Very stupid. Yeah.
And for his pretty features.
He was a very good looking man.
Yeah. So they would, you know, they just teased him a whole lot.
Imagine getting picked on for being good looking.
Right?
Well, right? Actually, no, I don't have to, because there are a lot of good looking comics that I've heard get roasted for being good looking. It makes sense.
Yeah. Touche.
Yeah.
But those are some of the things they would tease him about, amongst other things. But he told this interviewer that, quote, in the same things every day, holes in my jeans, the fucked up sneakers, you don't want to be Tupac, you want to be Jack. My mother had a rep. Couldn't nobody touch us. Mm-hmm. In another interview for Vibe magazine from the early 90s, Tupac spoke about acting, telling Kevin Powell, quote, I remember thinking, this is something none of them kids can do. I didn't like my life, but through acting, I could become somebody else.
Huh.
Yeah.
I know he did that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that like you were aroused by his acting.
Have you seen his movie?
No. No, I haven't seen anything that he's been in. Okay.
Yep. All right. Y'all are going to learn something new about Z today. We all know that I generally am sexually attracted to lurch-shaped men that look like sickly Victorian manservants.
Right.
I can't help that.
Uh-huh. But Tupac's the exception.
But the other end of that spectrum,
uh-huh,
is the cast of Black Panther and also majority of 90s hip-hop artists.
Okay.
What can I say?
Okay. No, that's fair. You and I are kind of similar in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got, those are the two clouds that hold together the rainbow that is my sexual spectrum.
Sure.
It's late. I have,
one of my
know.
Clouds is a little bigger than yours, but.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Christ almighty.
Another episode we'll go into one time.
Someday. That's for Patreon.
It's a listicle of people that Z thinks is hot and why.
Smash and pass.
Smash and pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that could actually be a fun that Patreon episode.
That could be a fun Patreon.
Put a pin in that.
Yes, we will.
Texting
into our group chat before.
Oh, perfect. Yes. I love that for all of us. Thank you. Because we know that as soon as I start talking again, I'm going to forget.
Uh-huh.
In the mid-80s, sources vary on the exact date, Afeni took the kids to Baltimore, where Tupac would eventually transfer to the prestigious Baltimore School for the Arts, telling Powell, quote, that school was the freest I ever felt. While there, he studied poetry, ballet, and acting, and would appear in several school theater productions, including works by Shakespeare and starring as the Mouse King in The Nutcracker.
Oh.
Yeah. He later shared that his love of theater had a profound influence on his later work, stating, quote, it influences all my work. I really like stuff like Les Miserables and Gospel at Colonus. And I love Shakespeare. He wrote some of the rawest stories, man. I mean, look at Romeo and Juliet. That's some serious ghetto shit. Look how he busts it up with Macbeth. After he commits the murder, the dude starts having delusions just like in a Scarface song.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I know. By the way, if my reactions to any of this come off as like, wow, Randy, you ignorant white idiot. Fair. Yeah. I know nothing about Tupac at all. Also,
I feel like...
he's so far outside of the things that influence me. I also feel like,
and me, I'm not that much older than you, but I am still older than
you.
Yeah,
you're a couple years.
I grew up with this.
Yeah.
So I know a little bit more because I was more cognizant, and that was like what my cousins were listening to at the time.
Yeah.
Like, up until like the Spice Girls came, 90s hip-hop and R&B was almost exclusively what I listened to.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll never forget my friend. We had lived together for years, a few times, friends from college, and she was moving to Chicago, and so I was taking her to the airport, and it was early as fuck, driving in the morning, and my songs were on shuffle and Salt and Pepper came on and I'm just rapping along and she looks at me like she has never met me in her entire life. Like her face was like, did I just get dropped into this car? Who the fuck are you? And why did I not know this about you? I have known you for nearly a decade, I think. And I was like, oh, you didn't ask.
Right. See, and for me, I came up with CCR and Van Morrison.
See, yes.
So I have. Like,
I mean, that was the other half because I grew up with my grandparents. And so I listened to a lot of the music they listened to.
Uh-huh.
And just, here's another one of those clouds on the rainbows.
Yep. That hodgepodge was not,
right?
Not in my, like my brother listened to a fair amount of that. But
yeah
the entire 80s and 90s right. Hip-hop and R&B movement was, I just missed it.
Right. And then I had with my aunt that I would spend a lot of weekends with, the one who introduced me to horror movies generally, she listened to a lot of stuff like what is now considered classic rock, but, you know, like Queen and Styx and stuff like that. And then my mom was like, I love Tina Turner and also Missy Elliott.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking to my mom because she asked me what I was covering this week, and I told her, and she's like, I've got a theory about who did it. I'm like, I love this for me, and I'm telling everyone. But remind me to get back to that at the end.
Okay, I will try.
Just ask me what her theory was. Okay, hold on. Anyway.
I have a feeling this episode's going to be full of lots of those.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of these little interruptions, so.
Right.
We're going to be here a while, guys.
Sorry about it. I made a poll in the Facebook group, in the squad page, asking if they would prefer a two-parter or a long episode. Unanimously voted.
Really?
Nary a vote for two-parter. Every single vote was for a long episode.
How many votes was it?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Under 20. But still, it was unanimous.
What a sample size.
I only did it for like, I only had it going for like half of a day.
Okay.
I didn't, once I saw that it was unanimous, I'm like, well, there's no point in keeping track of the votes anymore.
I'm also interested to hear from those people who prefer longer episodes. Are you okay? Like, does it tickle your pickle when there are interruptions like this in the stories where we just kind of, you know, fuck around for a minute and then get back to it?
Maybe.
Or are you frustrated and want me specifically to shut the fuck up and let this happen?
Well, I appreciate it at the moment. But also, I'm not in my right mind currently.
Sure.
Come back to me another week.
Okay.
Back to Tupac.
For now.
You might also be surprised to learn that his taste in music, much like mine, was widely varied and included artists like Culture Club, a.k.a. Boy George, U2, Sinead O'Connor, and Kate Bush.
Because he's a kid, which is in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not a ton else.
Yeah, going to performing arts school.
Yeah, that's what he was around. That makes complete sense.
And I'm like, hey, buddy, I get it. And also, I think the school, well, it was full. I think it was largely white students. There were students of color there, but I feel like, and this is just me guessing, I could be completely talking out of my ass, but I feel like it would make sense.
Sure. Also, if you talk to people who are in that world, a lot of them are like, oh, dude, fucking Zeppelin's my jam.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I wouldn't expect that of you, but also you're a musician, so of course you're listening to everything.
Well, that's like me just now saying how much I love 90s rap.
Yeah.
I feel like it's surprising for a lot of people. Our friend, the Oregon Wood Witch, told me I was casually hood. And it tickled my pickle. You're welcome. That was a callback just for you. A callback to 3 full minutes ago. But he also shared that, quote, I'm the kind of guy who's moved by a song like Don McLean's Vincent, that one about Van Gogh. The lyric on that song is so touching. That's how I want to make my songs feel.
He references Don McLean's song that nobody has ever heard.
There's going to be
wild.
This is going to be like a fucking voodoo doll because I'm going to keep telling you to put pins in things.
Yeah.
But yes, Baltimore School for the Arts is also where he met one of his dearest friends, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's been a lot of memes about her lately.
Yeah, well, you know, keep her name out of your mouth, everybody.
They all make me laugh.
Yeah.
So please, once you hear this episode, if you see him, send him my way.
Yeah.
He would later say of her, Jada is my heart. She will be my friend for my whole life. And she was. He wrote several poems for and inspired by her, and she would later appear in one of his music videos. And of course, the school was where he began rapping, entering several competitions with his friend Dana Mouse Smith. Unfortunately, things in Baltimore weren't the greatest, to say the least.
Yeah, that really hasn't gotten that much better.
Yeah, and after a neighborhood boy was shot and killed in a gang-related incident, Afeni decided to send Tupac and Set to a family friend's house in Marin County, California for the summer. However, the woman hosting the Shakur kids called Afeni not long after their arrival and told her to get on a plane because she herself was headed to an alcohol rehab facility.
Good for her.
Yeah, so Afeni left Baltimore and went to Marin County, where the shy, reserved, but very funny Pac would temporarily attend, Tamil Pais High School?
Sure.
I don't know.
You can see it. I can't.
Yeah, T-A-M-A-L-P-A-I-S. Tamil Pais, if it is French.
Do you remember what, couldn't tell. I think I told you recently, when I hear song lyrics, I can't. Same thing. Gotcha. Spell out a word, I'm not going to get it.
Okay. While there, he continued acting in theater productions, and in 1989, he started taking poetry classes from Layla Steinberg, who would later go on to become his first manager. He also lived with her and her family for a while, which might sound a little weird, but it was actually a necessity. So, in the summer of 1988, Afeni was at the height of her addiction. To make money, despite his disdain for drugs, Pac started selling them.
Okay.
He moved into an apartment with a few other guys and took up odd jobs here and there to get by financially. Over time, he dropped out of school, but would later go on to earn his GED. His relationship with his mother remained strained for the next few years. They had a big falling out about her drug use.
Sure.
She tried to hide it from him, and it was just all bad, so that's why he left.
Yeah.
But after Afeni returned to New York and started attending NA meetings and got clean, they eventually reconciled.
Fantastic.
In the early 90s.
Yeah.
I didn't write this down, but she didn't even know about her son's career until somebody told her about it. Like, in the beginning of his career. She had no idea, because that's how out of touch they had been.
Yeah.
The song Dear Mama is about their relationship, which feels very obvious, but if you weren't aware, there you go. And if you did know that, go really listen to the lyrics and cry your face off. Mm. Wow. Wow. It is.
I bet.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, especially after listening to this episode, go listen to that song. And
I feel like I know that song.
You do, but it's probably one of those that you've not, like, actively listened to.
Sure.
Recommend it.
Yeah.
In any event, while Tupac was living with Layla Steinberg, she organized a concert. A concert is loosely used.
Sure.
It was on her front lawn. For his group, Strictly Dope. She filmed it and sent the tape to Atron Gregory, manager of Digital Underground, at his request.
Okay.
After that, Atron signed Pac, and in 1990, he was working as a roadie and backup dancer for the Digital Underground. If you think you don't know who they are, yes, you do. I have three words for you. The Humpty Dance.
Oh, yes. Okay.
After signing with the group, he started going by the stylized version of his name, to Pac, the number two,
right.
Pac. And appeared on the group's 1991 single, Same Song, which also happened to be featured on the soundtrack to the dumpster fire of a movie, Nothing But Trouble. A movie, for inexplicable reasons, I absolutely loved as a kid. The group, including Tupac, were actually in the movie as well. If you feel like watching the Vulcanvanian Nightmare, you can find the whole thing on the YouTube for free, or if you really wanna, you can rent it on Prime. Or if you're completely insane, like I am, you can own it on DVD. Though I purchased it decades ago and can't in good conscience tell anyone to track it down or pay for it in any way, it is awful, but I love it.
Sure.
Because we all know I love certain kinds of trash, which this very much is.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, Demi Moore, Taylor Negron. Oh my God.
That sounds great.
I need you to get real stoned and find it on the YouTube.
Okay.
Or wherever you want to find it.
Uh-huh.
And watch it.
Just trash.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay.
It.
Special kind of trash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Dan Aykroyd.
I believe you.
My guy. Oh boy. Anyway, that movie, just fucking wow. Pac was with Digital Underground from 1988 to 1991, uh-huh. and recorded an album with Strictly Dope, his group, that was produced by Digital Underground and co-founding member of the group, Jimmy Chopmaster J. Drite, who would later recall that the young Pac wasn't really into working as part of a group, saying, quote, "This guy was on a mission from day one. Maybe he knew he wasn't going to be around 7 years later."
Ooh.
According to Digital Underground member Money B, quote, "He demanded attention. You could depend on that. The only way you couldn't depend on Pac was to keep his cool." Shock G, lead vocalist of Digital Underground, remembered Tupac's first gig with the group, which nearly ended with the young Pac punching out one of the sound guys after something went wrong with the equipment during their set.
Okay, hothead.
Yeah.
Real hothead.
Also, you have to remember, at this time, he was, like, under 21, I think.
Yeah.
When this happened. So, Shock G would later share about that night, saying, "We said, okay, we can't use you. 2 hours later, Tupac's back like nothing happened. It was like that all the time. He'd flip on you, then the incident didn't exist." And as it apparently turned out, the mishap had actually been on Pac to begin with. but that was something they always said, like, the jobs he was doing in the beginning were usually the jobs that nobody really wanted to do, but nothing ever got left anywhere on Pac's watch. He always, after that, like, he was like, "I got this." They're right. Like, "Hey, there's a table left somewhere." And he'd be like, "I'm on it." So,
all right.
There's that. Uh-huh. His work ethic was...
sounds stellar.
Bananas, Dumbo Circus.
Yeah.
Crazy Pants. Like, he would later go on to name, I think it was like a production company, 24/7, because that was his work ethic.
Right.
All day, every day. Shock G, who was closest to Pac, would also talk about his quieter side, sharing some of their offstage antics, including the time they snuck onto the tour bus with a couple of young ladies, saying, quote, "I'm thinking he's getting it on with this young lady, but then I listen. He's explaining terms of endearment to her real low so I won't hear. I almost laughed. What does Pac know about terms of endearment?
Like the...
The movie. Yeah. Like, he's just quietly explaining the plot of Terms of Endearment to this girl who's probably just trying to fuck.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm like, I just had to add that because it just was so
That's adorable.
Adorable. I'm like, now that I know this, I need everybody to know this.
Yeah.
That's so fucking cute. Especially given his later public persona. Where you're
yeah.
like, you would never expect this man to listen to Don McLean and watch Terms of Endearment.
Listen to anything but American Pie.
Right. So Shock G would also recall his time in the studio with Tupac, sharing that, quote, I saw him every time I was in the studio with him, and even then didn't see him much, because he would just pace, and he'd come back in the room, is the beat ready yet? God damn. Restless. He'd go outside and smoke, go across town or something, he'd come back. Yo, can I rhyme? Can I rhyme? Unlike most artists who would sit there as we figured out where the string line is going, he didn't sit for each listen. He'd come back out of the booth and listen one time down. Once we started selecting reverbs and levels and all that, he would get bored and just tap me on the shoulder and say, all right, make that shit dope.
Nice. Also, the song is called The Day the Music Died. Don't at me.
Yes.
Apologies.
It's fine.
All around.
Once again, I could talk about this chapter of Tupac's life for hours, because there is more, but...
I'm sure there is.
I'm going to try to keep it to myself. Yeah. That said, I highly recommend tracking down Christopher R. Weingarten's Rolling Stone interview with members of the Digital Underground from April of 2017 for a deep dive into his time with the group, because it's amazing. The article and the time itself.
Sure.
It was a really excellent article. So after being managed by Atron Gregory for a while, Tupac had enough material to record his debut album, Tupacalypse Now, which, yes, is a nod to
Apocalypse
the movie.
Now. That's fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I love this guy.
You fucking should. Which that was released in November of 1991 by Interscope Records. After its release, teenager Ronald Ray Howard shot and killed Texas State Trooper Bill Davidson during a traffic stop in what was later discovered to be a stolen car. Howard's defense attorney would cite Tupac's album as the driving influence behind the crime.
And so we have this whole craze starting.
Yup.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, there's not a whole lot of death influenced by media claims.
At this point. I do not believe so,
I don't think there's
no.
a ton.
Because this was the very early 90s.
Yeah.
After the murder, then Vice President Dan Quayle, remember him? You probably don't.
I mean, not through experience.
Yeah. But Vice President Quayle publicly stated that, quote, there's no reason for a record like this to be published. It has no place in our society. I don't know, Dan. I think discussing things like racism, police brutality, and teen pregnancy, to name a few topics Tupac covers on that album, I think they absolutely should be discussed, since they're already part of our society. Then again, trying to argue with a man who held the second highest office in the United States but couldn't spell potato... probably a moot point.
Right.
Tupac responded to the criticism saying, quote, I just wanted to rap about things that affected young black males. When I said that, I didn't know that I was going to tie myself down to just take all the blunts and hits for all the young black males, to be the media's kicking post for young black males. Despite the controversy, the album went gold after selling 500,000 copies.
Sure.
A month before the album was released, Tupac was stopped by two Oakland police officers for jaywalking. Things got heated, and in a later interview with hip-hop journalist Davey D, Pac said, quote, for everyone who doesn't know, I, an innocent young black male, was walking down the streets of Oakland, minding my own business, and the police department saw fit for me to be trained or snapped back into my place. So they asked me for my ID and sweated me about my name because my name is Tupac. My final words to them was, fuck y'all. Next thing I know, I was in a chokehold, passing out with cuffs on, headed for jail for resisting arrest.
Yeah.
Yes, you heard right. I was arrested for resisting arrest. He later filed a suit against the Oakland Police Department for $10 million and was ultimately awarded somewhere around $42,000. They stopped him and they kept asking to see his ID, which he provided, and they did not believe that Tupac was
his name.
Way
to go, Oakland.
More things change, the more things stay the same.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the midst of all this, Digital Underground's Money B went to audition for a part in a movie, and Tupac went with him. He's just like, yeah, I'll tag along.
Yeah.
As the story goes, Money B couldn't get the character quite right, so Pac took the script and said, I can do this shit. And do what he did. According to producer Neil Moritz, quote, Tupac was it. We cast him right on the spot. The role? Bishop in the movie Juice.
Okay.
After filming had wrapped in Harlem, Moritz told Pac, quote, 10 years from now, you're going to be a big star. To which the young up-and-comer cryptically responded, 10 years from now, I'm not going to be alive.
Damn.
That gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Riding the success of both his debut album and first starring film role, Tupac performed at an outdoor festival in Marin City. He maybe disparaged the area during the concert, which some people did not take kindly to. And after the show, he stuck around to meet with fans, sign autographs, take pictures, whatever. Details on what happened next vary, but the outcome remains the same. According to some retellings, a fight broke out in the crowd because people were pissed about what
he had said.
Incensed, yes. So a fight broke out. Tupac pulled a gun, allegedly, which he then dropped. It was picked up by someone else, possibly his stepbrother Moprim, and the gun accidentally fired, shooting 6-year-old Quade Walker Teal in the forehead as he rode his bike, killing him.
Oh, that's not a good look.
It's not. Tupac and his stepbrother were arrested, but ultimately released and not charged in the boy's death. He would memorialize the boy in his song Something to Die For on his second album. Years later, Quade's mother sued Tupac for the wrongful death of her son, and despite a lack of eyewitnesses to the event, they ended up settling the case for a sum that was rumored to have been between $300,000 to $500,000.
She's not wrong.
She's not. Not at all. Like, it was a horrific, horrific accident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Tupac was...
I imagine he was very shaken by it.
Inconsolable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just for years. Probably for the rest of his life, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just beside himself.
Yeah.
In 1993, Tupac starred alongside Janet Jackson in John Singleton's Poetic Justice. Later that same year, he was cast as Sharif in Alan Hughes's Menace to Society, but was ultimately fired from the role after assaulting the director while on set over an argument about the script.
Buddy.
I know. He, again, early 20s.
Yeah.
Is just, like I've said.
Full of piss and vinegar.
Like I've said before many times, your 20s are for being loud and wrong.
Right.
And.
Loud and wrong he was.
That doesn't discriminate movie stars
not to, a single person
to anybody.
Yeah.
Your 20s are for being loud and wrong, especially your early 20s.
Yeah.
Once you pass 25, it kind of edges off, but anyway. So the role of Sharif would later go to Vonte Sweet, and the movie would also happen to star Tupac's dear friend Jada Pinkett Smith. I think just Jada Pinkett again.
At the point,
now.
Yeah.
At the point, yes. And now again.
Oh, yeah, because did it come out that they weren't actually married?
No, they haven't been. She said they haven't been together in, like, the last 6 years or something. Everything I've learned about Jada Pinkett Smith and her personal life has been against my will. I go online and there's something new, and I'm like, I didn't.
So Will Smith slapped Chris Rock for what reason?
I wish I could tell you. I truly don't know. I try, as soon as I see it, I'm like, I don't need to know more. If it'll find me. It always does.
Right.
Somehow, like I said, against my will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there have been, that whole thing happened recently. That's why I said there have been a lot of memes about her lately.
Right.
And plenty involving Tupac, which too soon, but also they are kind of funny, but too soon. Forever too soon, but.
I was going to say, he died a while ago.
He did, but that's how I feel about certain people. Tupac, Steve Irwin.
Sure.
Jokes about Steve Irwin forever too soon. Off the table forever. Don't do it.
How old is his son?
Steve Irwin's?
Yeah.
Robert Irwin?
Yeah.
In his 20s, I think.
He's good looking. Yeah.
That's a problem. Yes.
Anyway.
So, fired from Menace to Society, which again, very good movie. Anyway, great. Mm-hmm. He was charged with assault and battery and sentenced to 15 days in jail for the crime. While filming, he met and went on to befriend a young man named Christopher, who had stopped by the set to visit. Others say the two met in L.A. when Chris asked a mutual friend to introduce him. Either way, one of the stories was Tupac was on set for Poetic Justice filming. This young man shows up. Tupac is listening to a song that happens to be this young man. Either way, the two met and became friends immediately. And if you hadn't gotten there yet, the Christopher in question was Christopher Wallace, a.k.a. the Notorious B.I.G.
Okay.
But more on that later.
Uh-huh.
On Halloween of that same year, 93, Tupac was arrested and charged with two counts of aggravated assault after shooting two off-duty police officers.
Oh, buddy.
Hold, please.
Okay.
However, all charges were later dropped against Tupac after witnesses stated that he had fired in self-defense after one of the officers pulled a weapon first.
Oh, wow.
It was later revealed that one of the officers had taken a gun from the evidence locker at his precinct, and the other had apparently made false statements to investigators.
So why did they attack him?
Stories vary.
Uh-huh.
The officers, obviously white.
Oh, you were about to get into that. Cool.
No.
Oh, okay.
Not that part, but a little bit. So it's been alleged that either one or both of the officers were drunk at the time of the incident, which may have started when Tupac's car nearly hit them and their wives at a crosswalk, or when Pac stepped out to intervene when he noticed the two white officers harassing a young black man.
Okay.
Yeah.
So one is kind of justified, the other one very much not. Yeah. When I say justified, that's not what I mean. Not unprovoked.
Yes. Yes. So, most people side with Tupac on this. They're like, it was, and these two officers had also already lied about what went on that night.
They said he almost hit?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then, fuck yeah. Them.
And that he was the aggressor and all this stuff. And he was like, they were harassing a young black man who was on his own.
Which sounds way likely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if they were drunk.
And it's the early 90s.
Like it was rumored to have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, no one's ever been able to say for sure how it went down. But
that's probably how it went down.
Like I said, they were all were all acquitted. I think one of the officers ended up quitting or going to another precinct.
Okay.
But yeah, the whole thing was a fucking mess. And they weren't clearly not fatally shot. One was shot like in the back side flank area, I guess. And the other was shot in the ass. Yeah. So they were fine.
Yeah.
You know, still, I mean, not good.
Right.
Not condoning, but
All things considered.
And I am going to continue to giggle about the fact that one of them got shot in the ass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, I'm sorry, that's just objectively funny. That's I don't care who funny. You are.
Yeah.
I would eventually laugh if I got shot in the ass.
Yeah. I'd probably laugh day of.
Yeah.
You know? Like, once I'm on the table getting stitches, be like, this is, it hurts, but it's really funny.
You're like, yeah, shot in the ass. Especially if they gave you them good drugs.
Yeah.
Hospital drugs.
Yeah.
Anything's hilarious.
Medically supervised fentanyl.
Yes. of the situation and Tupac's reaction to it. Atron Gregory would later say, quote, "I mean, maybe on occasion he had a short temper, but more than a short temper, he hated injustice." So you take the Atlanta shooting in 1993. The reason that happened was because of injustice that he saw happening in the middle of the night after a show that some white guys were doing to this black kid. Someone was disrespecting someone, and instead of him allowing his people or his security people to handle it, he took it upon himself to say, "This is not right," and that got him in trouble. If you hadn't already guessed, he had quite a few run-ins with the law, but I'm only going to talk about one more, because y'all know how I am. I love the details, but I have to remind myself that there are tons of documentaries out there about his life, including one Oscar-nominated doc from 2005, in addition to books, articles, and other forms of media that focus solely on his life. There was even a short-lived musical.
Oh, wow.
Basically, I'm giving you all an overview, and if you want all the details...
Yeah, they're out there.
They're fucking out there.
Yeah.
Like...
I was going to say, he's one of the most famous figures to have ever lived. I'm sure there is a lot out there on
him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, tons. And that also is what gave me some trouble putting this together.
Right.
Because I could literally have gone on for days. I might still. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes, because we're both punchy and insane. Any hoops. 1993 was a very busy year for Pac. His second movie was out and doing well. His second album had been released and would go on to sell a million copies, making it certified platinum. He also formed the group Thug Life with his stepbrother Mopreme,
okay.
Duron Macadocious Rivers, Tyrus Big Psych Himes, and Walter Rated R Burns.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Thug Life is kind of like the next generation of rappers and artists after Boyz II Hood. No, sorry. Fucking Jesus Christ. NWA.
They didn't...
I'm pulling this from straight out of Compton.
Oh, okay. Well, kind of. They weren't around for that long. They were only around for about a year.
Okay.
So maybe that may have been the intention, okay. But when they did perform, it was usually without Tupac.
Okay.
So they recorded an album, Thug Life Volume 1, which was released in 1994 and certified gold.
Cool.
He would also perform with up-and-coming artist Biggie Smalls several times, including at Madison Square Garden on one occasion. And they would go on to record the songs House of Pain and Running from the Police together. So there are two songs, East Coast and West Coast,
mm-hmm.
pre-beef. Mm-hmm. So Tupac took Biggie under his wing and mentored him, telling him to rap for the ladies if he wanted to make money. Because the ladies will listen to it and the men will follow.
Right.
Biggie listened, and you can tell the tone shift. So, like, if you listen to his early song Party and Bullshit and then listen to Big Papa, totally different styles. Right. And not gonna lie, Big Papa.
It's a great song.
It's a fucking sexy song. I don't care what you say. According to sources, Big wanted Tupac to manage him because the label he was with was new and not taking off as fast as he'd hoped. Homstever, Pac told Big to stick with his manager, Sean Puffy Combs, at Bad Boy, which Combs owned.
Yeah.
Saying, quote, "Nah, stay with Puff. He'll make you a star."
Wasn't wrong.
He was not wrong.
Not wrong at all.
In the fall of 93, Tupac was in Harlem shooting the movie Above the Rim. His character, Bertie Shepard, was allegedly based off of one-time New York drug dealer, promoter, and music executive, Jacques Haitian Jack Egnant. Biggie, who knew Haitian Jack and his crowd, because they kind of, like, ran in the same circles, warned Tupac that Jack was bad news and to not get involved with him. But Tupac found him fascinating, and they wound up spending a decent amount of time together. According to Haitian Jack himself, Tupac, quote, "loved the respect and recognition I got in New York, and I think he wanted that same respect." Unfortunately, Biggie may have been right, and Pac's relationship with Egnant would end poorly. In November of 1993, Tupac and Egnant were together at Nell's, a nightclub in Manhattan, when the 22-year-old rapper met the 19-year-old Ayana Jackson. They danced and went back to his suite at La Parker Meridian Hotel, and a few days later, she would return to the hotel for another visit. The first visit definitely involved hooking up.
Well, yeah.
I know that it was implied, but sometimes...
They fucked. And she was coming back for more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Accounts of what happened next differ. According to Tupac, after she came into the room, nothing had really started happening yet, because he wasn't, super into it, but he's like, eh. And then Haitian Jack, Pac's road manager, Charles Man-Man Fuller, and a third unnamed man came in after the girl. He then claimed that he left the suite and went to speak with his publicist in another room. It was like an adjoining room, where he wound up falling asleep on the couch. According to Ayana, Tupac and the other men forced her to perform oral sex on all of them and took turns raping her.
Oh.
Police were called, and three of the four men, including Pac, were arrested. Police also found guns in the room, which Tupac claimed belonged to Biggie. Tupac was then charged with sexual abuse, sodomy, and illegal...
So how old was she?
19. And he was 22.
Isn't sodomy underage, specifically? Or am I...
I don't think so. But she was 19.
Maybe I don't know what that is.
And also he was charged with illegal weapons possession. But the trial wouldn't take place until November and December of 1994. So the following year. He'd go on to say that he believed the whole thing was a setup by Haitian Jack, and quite possibly Ayana Jackson as well, but both parties denied the claims. John Singleton had originally cast Tupac as the lead in his next film, Higher Learning, but after the studio refused to finance the film due to Pac's charges and ongoing trial, he was fired from the role of Malik, and it then went to Omar Epps. In 1994, he would film Bullet with Mickey Rourke, but the film wouldn't be released until October 1996, a month after his death.
I was way off, by the way.
He would also film Gridlocked and Gang Related, which would both be posthumously released in 1997. The latter of the two movies actually wrapped just 2 weeks before his murder.
Oh, wow.
And while he was in prison, spoiler alert, he had lots of letters of support from people like Mickey Rourke, Madonna, whom he dated briefly in 1994.
Okay.
And his favorite letter, he said, came from Tony Danza, who was apparently a big fan of his music. Which just tickles me to no end. Like, I just can't imagine Tony Danza listening to Tupac.
Yep.
But when I try, it gives me the church giggles.
For those who don't know,
yes,
to clarify, sodomy, mouth or butt, which is why gay men are so often referred to as sodomites.
There it is.
Yep.
In March of 1994, 4 months after the incident, Tupac appeared on the Arsenio Hall show, where he would say that because he'd been raised and surrounded by women his whole life, he was incredibly hurt that, quote, a woman would accuse me of taking something from her. In another interview with Kevin Powell from, spoiler alert, prison, Tupac did admit that he was ashamed of what had happened, despite his innocence, saying, quote, but I know I feel ashamed because I wanted to be accepted and because I didn't want no harm done to me. I didn't say nothing. So he was claiming guilt by inaction.
Sure.
Because there was more to that quote, but it was very long.
Right.
But saying basically he saw the guys come into the room and he didn't want any part of it because he was like he knew what their intention was.
Yeah.
And he just left. And he felt much shame and guilt for not doing anything because he wanted to, you know, be with this in crowd at the time.
Right. Right.
And
yeah, that's fucked.
Which fucking sucks.
That's fucking sucks a lot.
But he did admit that he's like, yeah, I'm ashamed. I should have done something and I didn't. I should have said something and I didn't. Which.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
And you should feel bad.
Yeah. And he did. Mm-hmm. Which is good.
Yeah.
So in that same interview, he talked about how prison had changed him for the better and that he planned on doing good once he was out, sharing, quote, "It's a gift straight up. This is God's will. And everybody that said I wasn't nothing, my whole goal is to just make them ashamed that they wrote me off like that. Because I'm 23 years old. And I might just be my mother's child, but in all reality, I'm everybody's child. You know what I'm saying? Nobody raised me. I was raised in this society. But I'm not going to use that as an excuse no more. I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps, and I'm going to make a change. And my change is going to make a change through the community. And through that, they're going to see what type of person I truly was, where my heart was. This thug-like stuff, or this thug-life stuff, it was just ignorance. My intentions was always in the right place. I never killed anybody. I never raped anybody. I never committed no crimes that weren't honorable, that weren't to defend myself. So that's what I'm going to show them. I'm going to show people my true intentions and my true heart. I'm going to show them the man that my mother raised. I'm going to make them all proud."
Okay.
Yep.
This is going to be heartbreaking.
Yep. Sure fucking is.
Are you going to need help later, maybe?
I fucking might.
Okay.
Because I can tell you right now that I cried when I was writing it.
Yep.
And I'm now punching the microphone. Yeah. In an interview with LA Times, shortly after his release, he told interviewer Chuck Phillips, quote, "Let me say for the record, I am not a gangster and never have been. I'm not the thief who grabs your purse. I'm not the guy who jacks your car. I'm not down with people who steal and hurt others. I'm just a brother who fights back."
This is going to be rough.
It's going to fucking suck.
Yeah, it's going to get rough.
On November 30th, 1994, the day after jury deliberations began, because this is all, like, we're going back in time a little bit to before prison.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, spoiler alert, prison. So it was the day after jury deliberations began. Tupac had been contacted by manager Jimmy Henchman Rosemond, who offered him $7,000 to do a guest spot on a song for Little Sean, who also happened to be an associate of Puffy and Biggie's.
Okay.
At the time, between legal fees and helping out family with the ever-growing extended family showing up,
yeah.
Tupac was nearly broke. So he agreed to do this spot for
$7,000. Not bad.
Also,
not
he bad was pay. In his early 20s and maybe not the best at managing his own money.
Yeah.
But again, Whomst Among Us was yeah great with money in our 20s.
I'm 34 and I or suck now at it.
Also, same.
Yeah.
Older, but yes. so, you know, a little bit of A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Mostly legal fees though, yeah, at yeah, the yeah time, because Jesus. So he agreed to do it. He made his way to Quad Recording Studios in Times Square. In his own words, Pac described the night to Kevin Powell, saying, because whom's better to tell us about the night than the man himself?
Right.
He said, quote, "As we're walking up to the building, somebody screamed up from the top of the studio. It was Little Cease, Biggie's side man. That's my homeboy. As soon as I saw him, all my concerns about the situation were relaxed. I was with my homeboy Stretch, his man Fred, and my sister's boyfriend Zaid. Not my bodyguard. I don't have a bodyguard. We get to the studio, and there's a dude outside in army fatigues with his hat low on his face. When we walked to the door, he didn't look up. I've never seen a black man not acknowledge me one way or the other, either with jealousy or respect. But this guy just looked to see who I was and turned his face down. It didn't click because I had just finished smoking chronic. I was not thinking something will happen to me in the lobby. While we're waiting to get buzzed in, I saw a dude sitting at a table reading a newspaper. He didn't look up either. So first I'm like, these dudes must be security for Biggie because I could tell they were from Brooklyn from their army fatigues. But then I said, wait a minute. Even Biggie's homeboys love me. Why don't they look up? I pressed the elevator button, turned around, and that's when the dudes came out with the guns. Two identical 9mm. Don't nobody move. Everybody on the floor. You know what time it is. Run your shit. I was like, what do I do? They came straight to me. Everybody dropped to the floor like potatoes, but I just froze up. It wasn't like I was being brave or nothing. I just could not get on the floor. They started grabbing at me to see if I was strapped. They said, take off your jewels, and I wouldn't take them off. He was telling the light-skinned dude, shoot that motherfucker. Fuck it. Then I got scared because the dude had the gun to my stomach. I drew my arm around him to move the gun to my side. He shot and the gun twisted, and that's when I got hit for the first time. I felt it in my leg. I didn't know I got shot in my balls. I dropped to the floor. Everything in my mind said, "Pock, pretend you're dead." It didn't matter. They started kicking me, hitting me. I never said, "Don't shoot." I was quiet as hell. They were snatching my shit off me while I was laying on the floor. I had my eyes closed, but I was shaking because the situation had me shaking. And then I felt something on the back of my head, something real strong. I thought they stomped me or pistol whipped me, and they were stomping my head against the concrete. I saw white, just white. I didn't hear nothing. I didn't feel nothing. And I said, "I'm unconscious." But I was conscious. And then I felt it again. And I could hear things now, and I could see things, and they were bringing me back to consciousness. Then they did it again, and I couldn't hear nothing, and I couldn't see nothing, and it was just all white. And then they hit me again, and I could hear things, and I could see things, and I knew I was conscious again.
So, sorry, I had to turn around for a sec. He was being resuscitated?
He got jumped.
Okay.
Once the attack was over, Tupac learned that he'd been shot 5 times.
Holy shit.
Including in the head and, yes, his balls. Wow. Forensics would later deem that it was likely that shot came from his own gun in an accidental discharge. But either way, fucking ow.
Yeah, fucking ow.
Biggie and Combs were said to be upstairs recording that night, which led Tupac to believe that he'd been set up once again and ambushed. Retired New York Police Department cop Bill Courtney shared his thoughts on the matter. According to him, the shooting was probably in retaliation for comments that Tupac had made about Haitian Jack to the Daily News, saying, quote, "a message was being sent to him not to name drop." In 2005, henchmen would tell Vibe magazine, quote, "nobody came to rob you, they came to discipline you."
Fuck you.
Both Combs and Biggie denied any involvement. Oh my god, I'm gonna sneeze. Maybe. Did I curse it? Did I make it go away? I think I did.
I'm gonna write this down real quick so I can cut it out. Also, how many more pages you got? John just texted me.
Five.
We got a minute. Okay.
Tupac's father didn't believe that Big was involved in the shooting, saying, quote, "I went to the hospital. Biggie came and walked up to me and said, 'Mr. Garland, I'm sorry for your inconvenience. If there's anything I can do for you, feel free to call.' There's no way in hell that a man who was involved in a shooting would do that. Not the way he did it. There was no fear. There was no hesitation. You could see he was just as concerned about Pac as anybody." In an MTV interview, Tupac's friend and fellow artist Tretch of Naughty by Nature stated that, quote, "he really thought when he got shot for the first time that, not that Big set it up or anything, just Big didn't tell him who did it. In his heart, he was like, 'the homie know who did it.'" So basically, he was like, "I don't think Big did it, but he didn't tell me."
Right.
One bright spot in this whole mess, Tupac was reunited with his biological father, Billy Garland.
Oh!
While Tupac was in the hospital, Garland showed up. It was the first time he'd seen his son since losing contact with Afeni when the boy was 5.
Wow.
Yeah. Their reunion was brief, but the men would reconcile and start to work on building a relationship.
The end of this is going to be so sad.
Yup. Yeah. There was an interview I read in XXL magazine, which is obviously archived online, about it's with Billy Garland talking about his son, and it is.
Yeah, I know. Rough. Watching these documentaries will probably make me tear up.
That's why I haven't any. On December 1st, 1994, just hours after surgery, because remember, the night before, he had been shot 5 times.
Right.
So they had to do some surgery. And a few hours after that, despite doctor's warnings, Tupac checked himself out of the hospital and went back to court.
You're fucking dumb child.
He would later say of his decision, quote, they came to the bed and said, Pac, you don't need to go to court. I was like, no, I felt if the jury didn't see me, they would think I'm doing a show or some shit. Because they were sequestered and didn't know I got shot.
Okay, so fair.
I knew I had to show up no matter what. I swear to God, the farthest thing from my mind was sympathy. All I could think of was stand up and fight. Fight for your life like you fight for your life in the hospital. Yeah.
Fucking Christ.
He was acquitted of the gun and sodomy charges, but was ultimately convicted on two charges of first-degree sexual abuse for, quote, forcibly touching the woman's buttocks while in his hotel room. 2 months later, he was sentenced to 1.5 to 4.5 years in prison, a majority of which was spent in Dannemora, New York's maximum security Clinton Correctional Facility, and had his bail set at $3 million, which his attorney would call inhumane.
Yeah.
Yeah. While incarcerated, his third album, Me Against the World, was released. It debuted at number one on the Billboard 200.
Damn.
A couple of months into his sentence, Tupac married his girlfriend, Keisha Morris, though it would be annulled just shy of a year later. But they did remain friends for the rest of his life, which I know was not a very long time, but still. In 1995, upon learning that Afeni was about to lose her house, I do believe she was clean at this time. So when he found that out, Tupac had Keisha get in contact with founder of Death Row Records, Marion Suge Knight, for help.
And here's where it starts.
Yep.
Yeah.
According to Reggie Wright Jr.,
that much I do know.
Death Row's then head of security, quote, Suge sent $15,000 and put it on his book. Uh-huh. Just no communication, just $15,000 showed up in Pac's book in prison.
Okay, so A, shady as fuck.
I could do a whole episode about Suge Knight.
I know. That's like, here's the thing. I don't know a whole lot about Tupac. I do know that when this relationship started is when it starts to get very intense and sad.
Yes.
Yeah.
So after that happened, Suge started flying from L.A. to New York to visit Tupac in prison. And even had Death Row attorney David Kenner start working on an appeal. In August, Knight flew from New York to L.A. and went straight to the second annual Source Awards, which I cannot hear without thinking about season one, episode of 30 Rock, because I can't explain why, because the goblin that pilots my brain won't reveal his secrets. But these are the things that I think about and the things that I know. So anyway, he shows up at the second annual Source Awards, where he and Death Row received the award for best soundtrack for Tupac's movie Above the Rim. During his speech, he threw major shade at Sean Combs, saying, quote, any artist out there want to be an artist and want to stay a star and don't have to worry about the executive producer trying to be in all the videos, all on the records, dancing, come to Death Row.
Wow.
Everybody booed.
Shots fucking fired.
Truly. Because if you have ever seen any Bad Boys artists' videos or heard any of their songs, Diddy gonna be there.
Yeah, and from what I understand, like, again, not part of that world.
Yeah.
He was, like, anything he was involved with involved a lot of flaunting.
Yes.
And a lot of, yeah, just like, here's how rich I am, here's how much ladies want me, look at the cars and mansions that I have. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, the crowd, everybody booed. And this event has largely been regarded as the beginning of the West Coast versus East Coast wars.
Okay.
Tretch, again, from Naughty by Nature, would later say that the media hyped up the whole thing, making it much worse than it actually was, and that there hadn't actually been any real East Coast versus West Coast beef to begin with, And that quote, "I knew it was going to be some real serious consequences when I saw the Vibe magazine cover, and it was Puffy and Biggie on it, and the title on it was East versus West. I said, somebody's going to die. They murdered the game right there." Unfortunately, he was right. To make matters worse, in February of 1995, Big released the B-side song, "Who Shot Ya?" which was believed to have been a direct dig at Tupac.
Yeah.
Like, listen to it. Check out the lyrics. There's no way it's not. Like, he tried to say that, like, he had some explanation for it, but I'm like, come on, buddy. We all know. During his August visit to Dannemora, Knight posted Tupac's $1.4 million bail on one condition. He signed with Death Row Records.
Fuck. God damn. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. A 3-page contract committing Pac to 3 albums with the label and putting Suge in charge of his business affairs was drawn up. Pac signed, and he was released from prison in October of 1995. Less than a week after he was out, Tupac recorded a total of 14 songs for his next album, All Eyes on Me. 6 days. It was 6 days.
That's crazy.
He recorded 14 songs. The first single released in December of 1995, you may have heard of it, California Love.
Yeah.
A song that I maybe absolutely most definitely threw that ass back to many times while researching and writing this story. Uh-huh. Yeah. A song that I've actually loved since its release. Yes. Jada Pinkett was actually credited with the idea for the video and was initially set to direct it, but stepped back and was replaced by Hype Williams. The full album was released on February 13th, 1996. In June, Pac and his group, The Outlaws, would release a B-side response to Biggie's diss track called Hit 'Em Up, which featured lyrics like, "You claim to be a player, but I fucked your wife."
Wow!
And also, he calls everyone out by name. And he called Biggie a fat motherfucker in the song.
Damn.
Oh, yeah.
There's one thing that I have learned about all of these people is that they got, like, real petty.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what, like, everything is based on, is just straight pettiness.
You want to know how petty it gets?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Okay.
It should be noted that at some point, Big and his wife, Faith Evans, were separated, and she was rumored to not have... to have not only had a relationship with Tupac, but to have also provided some of the backing vocals on Hit 'Em Up.
Wow.
Yeah. In some of Biggie's songs, there are backing vocals that are Get Money. And on Hit 'Em Up, he has some ladies singing Take Money. And one of those ladies was, in fact, Faith Evans. Biggie's...
X. At the time, separated wife.
Yep. In her book, Keep the Faith, Evans did admit to recording some vocals for Tupac, but claimed that she was unaware of how serious the beef between the two men was.
Which is fair.
It is. She also said that Pac had propositioned her, but she declined his advances. Mm. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah. He's like, oh, you want to get petty? Number one, I'm going to tell you that I fucked your wife. Number two, I'm going to call you a fat motherfucker. Oh, we're going to do a callback, bring it around town, right back to your wife? Yeah, she's singing on my song about how you're a fat motherfucker that I can't stand anymore.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, I implore you to listen to both of those songs. Biggie's is definitely, it's like a wink and a nudge.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, oh, it, of course. Pac's song, there is no question.
Yeah.
There is no implication. It is straight up, fuck you, I fucked your wife, fuck Diddy, fuck all your friends, I will kill you. I hope you die. Like, and it is, it has been regarded as one of, if not the best diss tracks in the history of rap music.
Amazing.
It's...
yeah, chef's kiss.
It's just, wow. Holy shit. But Pac did make good on his word to start making changes through his community, which according to Vanity Fair included, quote, the financing of an at-risk youth center, the bankrolling of year-round South Central sports teams, the setting up of an 800 number that would allow kids to call him whenever they had a problem, and plans he was drawing up with Layla to reform the education system. He also had plans to write scripts, books, and make more music. Despite keeping himself booked and busy, those closest to him could tell that something was off. He wanted out of his contract with Death Row.
Yeah.
In a 1997 New Yorker interview, Charles Ogletree Jr., one of Tupac's former lawyers, shared that, quote, he had euthanasia, he had the Outlaws, he had his movie deals, he was building something that was all to be part of one entity. He had a strategy. Strategy.
Strategy.
My brain and mouth are not friends today.
It's late.
And that it doesn't help.
Yeah.
He had a strategy. The idea was to maintain a friendly relationship with Suge, but to separate his business. Euthanasia, by the way, was the production company he set up in February of 1996. Wendy Day, an associate of Tupac's and founder of Rap Coalition, a nonprofit organization that Pac was the first board member of, added her 2 cents saying, quote, I did notice that in the summer right before he died, he'd stopped wearing the Death Row chain. He started wearing an angel pendant. That was when I reached out to him to make sure everything was okay. He's like, I'm going to be leaving Death Row. I want to start shopping a deal for my company. Since I helped the East Coast and the West Coast go to war, my first project I want to put out is called One Nation. And that's what I was working on when he was shot. So he wanted to put together a group of East Coast and West Coast rappers.
To settle. God damn it, dude.
Yep. According to another unnamed friend, quote, he was sick of the game. He was exhausted playing the gangster role. Over a 7-day period in August of 1996, 3 days to record, 4 days to mix it, Tupac recorded his third album for Death Row, The Don Killuminati, The 7-Day Theory, under the name Machiavelli. He had read The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli while in prison and resonated.
Mm-hmm.
According to former Death Row head of publicity, George Papa G. Price, quote, Machiavelli, which we did, was a sort of tongue-in-cheek, and it was not ready to come out. But after Tupac was murdered, it did come out. Before that, it was going to be sort of an underground release. So there are a lot of people, critics mostly, that when 7-Day Theory came out, they were like, this is trash! But it's because it wasn't finished.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was never supposed to be like a Billboard release kind of thing.
Right.
It was just his third contractual album with Death Row Records.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it probably would have been, like, fans say it's one of his best. But, you know, fans and critics.
Right.
It's always going to be.
Always the divide.
Yeah. So, and again, it was not a finished album when he passed, but
right.
They released it, so. That's also a big reason why it wasn't what critics expected of him.
Right.
So, after a trip to New York for the MTV VMAs, Tupac returned to the Calabasas home he shared with his girlfriend, Kidada Jones, daughter of Quincy Jones and Peggy Lipton, early on September 7th, 1996.
This is it?
Here we fucking go. He seemed off and revealed that he'd promised to go to Vegas with Suge for that that night for a boxing match between Bruce Seldon and Mike Tyson. Kidada started packing for the both of them. And I also wanted to note that this home in Calabasas was rented for them by Death Row Records. And he...
Suge Knight was very sticky.
Yes, and he wanted out. And in this Vanity Fair article, it's talking a lot about his relationship with Kidada Jones,
Correct me if I'm wrong, because again, you know, I've been like kind of circling. Death Row Records is Suge Knight's label.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And just talking about how he had changed, you know, after getting out of prison, and how he wanted to leave Death Row. He wanted to do his own thing. He wanted to settle down. He wanted to marry her.
Well, Suge Knight basically owns him.
Yeah. But that third album was going to be his out. Be right. Like, I did it, and now it's time for me to do my own thing. And he, I think I maybe quote him somewhere in here, or maybe not, but he basically said, like, we're going to be associates, you know, but sure. I just don't want to, I want to do my own thing.
Sure.
I want to move on. But no ill will.
Sure.
I just, you know, it's time. But yeah, the Vanity Fair article is talking about, you know, how much he's in love with this woman, Kidada Jones. He'd actually, like, their relationship did not start off great because he had said something in the press, basically shitting on Quincy Jones for having interracial relationships, but he was young when he said it.
Okay.
And he apologized to Quincy Jones and to Kidada Jones because she was like,
I'm sorry.
Fuck you. When they met, and he, you know, apologized and was like, I was fucking dumb. And Quincy Jones, like, approached him, I think at a restaurant or something, and was like, we need to talk.
Yeah.
And he was like, yes, we do, sir. And then Kidada said something about how when she turned around, she saw them hugging. And I was like, oh, and then she gave him her phone number after that.
Which that's just adorable in the worst way.
Right? Yeah. And so, but she's just like, and she has said in later years that he was the love of her life.
This is going to get so sad.
It really is.
I can already tell you're going to need me to help you.
I might indeed. Yeah. But yeah, so he had been looking at apartments in Beverly Hills for them. She had, like, while he was gone in New York, she had assumed that he was going to be sleeping with other women because, you know, he's fucking Tupac Shakur.
Right, right.
And he's like, I don't do that anymore. I love you. And he would, each night, either over the phone or in person, he would tell her, I'd take a bullet for you. He wanted her to have his babies, which was something that he hadn't really wanted in the past.
Right.
Really. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get through the sad.
And it's about to really fuck you up in a second.
Yeah.
Because Kidada, like I said, she had started packing for the both of them because she was going with him. Like, he had wanted to go on vacation. But he's like, I have to do this. I said I'd go. So I gotta go. I want you to come with me. Because there was also, I believe, a birthday party for his publicist or something.
In Vegas. I mean,
exactly.
He's busy. She's got a lot to
exactly. occupy. Exactly. And there was going to be a group of women there. So yeah. She would be fine while they went to the fight. He didn't want her to go to the fight because it was rowdy.
Yeah.
And, you know, so she's packing. And usually he was super particular about, like, what he was going to wear, but he was like, I don't care. And she suggested that he take the bulletproof vest he'd started wearing.
Fuck!
He declined, telling her, quote, no, it'll be too hot.
Jesus.
I know. The fight, which took place at the MGM Grand, only lasted 109 seconds before Tyson KO'd Seldon.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Tyson was a fucking beast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My grandpa used to do the pay-per-view for the fights, and I remember when this one came, because it was huge.
Yeah.
And everybody was a little bit pissed that it didn't last very long. Yeah. Like, I paid all this money for fucking pay-per-view for this goddamn fight.
And it wasn't even 2 minutes.
Goddamn it. But, you know. So, as the group made their way to the lobby, you know, going through a side door because,
yeah,
Tupac. Death Row employee Trevon Lane spotted Orlando Baby Lane Anderson in the crowd. Anderson was a known member of the Southside Compton Crips, rivals to the Bloods, which Suge Knight was a well-known member of a faction of.
Okay.
Yes. A couple of months prior, Anderson had been involved in an attack against Lane at the Lakewood Mall. They tried to steal Lane's death row medallion, his chain, because allegedly the Crips had offered up cash to anyone that turned one in. Because Suge Knight was... Yeah. Anyway. In 2016, Danny Boy Stewart would come forward and say that a $75,000 bounty was put out for anyone that could bring one of the chains to none other than head of Bad Boy Records, Sean Combs. And that, and that Diddy was the one who made the call to action himself, saying, I will pay you this money if you get me those chains.
Wow.
Yup. So, Lane revealed to Knight and the rest of the entourage that Anderson had been the one to attack him at the mall. A fight broke out and ended with Anderson getting the shit kicked out of him by five men, including Tupac, who allegedly threw the first punch. Something along the lines of, like, he went up to this kid and was like, you from the South Side? The kid was like, yeah. And then Tupac socked him in the face. After the fight was broken up by hotel security, everybody went their own way. Tupac returned to the Luxor to change clothes and tell Kidada what happened, saying, quote, something's up, you stay here.
Okay.
Yep. Tupac was scheduled to perform for a charity event at Club 662, which was owned by Knight, later that evening. But first they made a stop to Knight's home, because he had one somewhere in the area.
Sure.
Nobody knows why, but they did. They left there around 11 p.m. in a black BMW and headed towards the club with security and other members of the entourage behind them. At 11:10 p.m., while stopped at a light in front of the Maxim Hotel at the intersection of East Flamingo Road and Koval Lane, a car with two women pulled up beside, pulled up to the left side of the BMW. They started chatting with Tupac, who was in the passenger seat. And at 11:15, at another light, because if you've ever driven the strip,
it's nothing but lights and you're stopped at all.
Nothing but lights. And they had also been stopped earlier by bike cops.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't have plates on the car and the music was very loud. But they found the plates in the trunk and they let everybody go with a warning. They're like, be on your way.
Yeah.
Then at 11:15, a white older model Cadillac pulled up on the right side of the BMW, effectively blocking the car in. Because traffic on the strip.
Uh-huh.
The back window of the Cadillac rolled down and started firing into the BMW. Tupac tried to climb into the back seat, but was shot four times, with one bullet going into his right lung. Frank Alexander, Tupac's bodyguard, wasn't in the car at the time, because now he did have a bodyguard.
Right.
And he would later share that Shakur had asked him to ride with Kidada instead. In another car.
Yeah.
Knight was also hit, but tried to drive towards the hospital, but was disoriented from having been struck in the head, either grazed by a bullet or by shrapnel. Yeah. So he is bleeding out of his head. Yeah. Tupac is bleeding
out of his lung,
out of his body. He was shot
four times.
In the chest twice, in the thigh, and I believe the hand or arm. So Suge makes a U-turn trying to go to the hospital, which was the wrong way. But again, everybody's bleeding
right
out of their bodies.
Right.
He had a flat tire. He made it a mile down the road to Las Vegas Boulevard and Harmon Avenue, which is not far from the MGM Grand, where they start at the night.
Right.
Before running into, I believe, a divider.
Okay.
And getting stopped by more bicycle cops. According to retired sergeant for the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, Chris Carroll, who was on the scene that night after everybody had arrived, quote, he looked at me, and he took a breath to get the words out, and he opened his mouth. And then the words came out. Fuck you. Because he was asking him, who shot you? What happened? Because this guy... The cop is like, what happened? Who shot you? And he's like claiming that like he... Suge is in the background like... And Suge Knight is a fucking huge dude.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
And so this cop, I think he was one of the bicycle cops, was like, holy shit, what the fuck is happening? Suge keeps coming up to him and he's like, back off, motherfucker. Like, this giant man bleeding from his head keeps approaching him and Suge's like, got his hands. He's like, all right, okay, fine. And then he keeps saying, he's like, Pac, Pac, calling out to him. And then the guy looks down and sees the, because he like opens the door and he kind of like falls out like he was leaning against the door. And he sees that he's wearing all these chains and stuff. And then he realizes that's fucking Tupac Shakur.
Right.
And he's like, what happened? Tell me what you saw. Do you know who shot you? And he looks at him and says, fuck you. Which would be great.
God damn, dude.
However, Carol wouldn't come forward with this claim, alleged to be Tupac's last words, until 2014, saying, quote, it's been almost 18 years. There's clearly never going to be a court case on this. And that he didn't want, quote, Tupac to be a martyr or a hero because he told the cops, fuck you, end quote. Others...
Here's the thing, guy. You just made him both a martyr and a hero.
Yeah. However, others on the scene, including Suge Knight, paramedics, other cops, said they never heard him say any such thing at all.
Okay.
So I feel like this guy was just maybe trying to get some fucking clout and be like, sure, I'm a cool guy. Nobody. No.
Oh, that would have been so fucking
funny. But I also would not be surprised if it were true.
Right.
I just have a hard time fully believing it.
Right.
Because nobody else heard it.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, paramedics came and took Shakur to the University Medical Center of Southern Nevada, where he was kept under heavy sedation and eventually placed into a medically induced coma after he kept trying to get out of bed.
Oh my God, buddy.
Yep. Members from his group, the Outlaws, stood guard outside of his room in the critical care unit on the chance whoever was responsible for the shooting would show up to finish the job.
Right.
Here's what gets really rough. Afeni and Kidada were at his side, and at one point, Kidada began playing Don McLean's Vincent on a CD player next to Tupac's bed. I know. According to her, she heard him moan and saw him open his eyes. She asked him to move his feet if he could hear her, and he did. She asked if he knew that she loved him, and if he knew that they all loved him, which he responded to with a nod. I have to drink water and punch a microphone about it. Oh,
this is fucking heartbreaking.
Uh-huh. Yeah. On Friday, September 13th, 1996, Tupac underwent surgery to remove his right lung. He went into respiratory failure and then cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
Doctors attempted to resuscitate him, but weren't able to stop the hemorrhaging. And then Afeni made the call to cease medical intervention and take her son off of life support. 7 days after the attack, 25-year-old Tupac Amaru Shakur was gone.
Yep.
Afeni would later share that while she'd always known her son was destined for greatness, she also constantly feared for his life. Telling Veronica Chambers for Esquire, quote, it's funny because I never believed he would live. From the moment he was born, I measured his life in 5-year periods. When he was 5, I was so grateful. When he was 10, I thanked God he was 10. 15, 20, 25, I was always amazed he'd survived. He was a gift.
This is a lot.
I know. I'm sorry. The following day, Tupac was cremated. Members of the Outlaws would later claim that they rolled some of his ashes up in a joint that they smoked.
Okay, gross.
Right, but Afeni would deny this.
Okay.
Other sources say that Afeni spread some of his ashes at an undisclosed location in L.A. while spreading the remainder in the garden of her home in Stone Mountain, Georgia. You know exactly where my brain went. Mm-hmm. Stone Mountain, Georgia. It's Kenneth Ellen Parcell. I can't help it. I'm not sorry. It is also the home of Donald Glover AKA Childish Gambino.
Yeah.
Because he was a writer on the show.
Yeah.
Right. So there you go. On March 9th, 1997, 6 months after Tupac's death, Christopher Notorious B.I.G. Wallace was shot and killed at a red light on Wilshire Boulevard and Fairfax Avenue. He was 24 years old.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. In 1999, Big's mother, Valletta Wallace, and Afeni Shakur took the stage at the MTV VMAs to present the award for Best Rap Video with Will Smith. The women hugged. There was a standing ovation. Afeni spoke first, saying, "In keeping with both our sons' memories and contributions to the arts, we stand united as mothers preserving their legacies." Followed by Valletta sharing, "The fact that we are even standing here shows what the power of faith, friends, family, loved ones, and fans can do to bring us all closer."
God,
I remember watching it live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It was powerful.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds fucking heavy.
To say the least. Just a few years after both of their sons were fucking murdered.
Yeah.
Jay-Z ended up receiving the award for Can I Get A, shouting Big and Tupac forever from the stage, which, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
After his death, Afeni took control of his estate and in 1997 founded the Shakur Family Foundation, which was later renamed the Tupac Amaru Shakur Foundation. His sister, I believe, is still the president or
head
yeah. of it. According to their mission statement, the Tupac Amaru Shakur Foundation aims to, quote, provide training and support for students who aspire to enhance their creative talents. Like I mentioned before, a few films of his were released after his death. He'd allegedly been eyed by George Lucas for the part of Mace Windu in The Phantom Menace.
Really?
Which was being written in 1996. But after his death, the part went to Tupac's former Juice co-star, Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
It's also been rumored that Jackson's shaved head in the film was an homage to Tupac. Several albums containing previously unreleased tracks were released over the years. And in 2012, an image of Tupac was projected onto the stage at Coachella, where he performed with Dr. Dre and Snoop.
Right.
Some people called it hologram, but it wasn't really, technically speaking, a hologram. It was a projection. So, tomato, tomato, semantics, whatever.
Yeah.
There was apparently supposed to be a full tour of that.
Right, I remember that happening.
And Dre was like, absolutely the fuck not.
Yeah.
One and done. Which is fair.
For a very good fucking reason. Yeah.
Tupac received several posthumous awards, and in 2023, he received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh.
Which was accepted by his sister, Sakiwa Set Shakur. Of the honor, she said, quote, "From the first time he stepped foot on the stage of the Apollo Theater at 13, before anyone recognized his name, he knew he had the dream to have a star here on the Walk of Fame. Today, we're not just honoring a star in the ground, but we're honoring the work and the passion that he's put into making his dreams come true. His heavenly star will shine a little brighter today." Oh, no. Oh, no. And once again, he has made us all extremely proud. Afeni Shakur died in May of 2016 after going into cardiac arrest. Prior to her death, she'd set up a trust to control all of her son's music rights and made music executive Tom Whaley the executor of his estate should anything happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, she died before learning who was truly behind her son's murder. Now, there are endless conspiracies out there about who killed Tupac, why he was killed, and even some that say he's still alive and living abroad under a new identity. I am not here to talk about those.
Right.
We've already been here forever. Not to mention the fact that most of the conspiracies are complete and utter garbage.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, there was an investigation at the time of Tupac's murder, but no one seemed willing to come forward and share any information that would lead to the arrest of his killer. Even, like, Suge Knight, for example, was like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
They weren't they're not,
yeah,
they're not going to
divulge information. It's
yeah.
not, yeah. Because that leads to, that's a huge domino effect.
More questions.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Over the years, almost every direct witness to the events that night died.
Damn.
Including Orlando Anderson, who was gunned down in an unrelated incident in 1998 at 23 years old, leading most people to believe that his murder would remain unsolved.
Yeah.
However, that may not be the case after all. Two eyewitnesses are still alive. Suge Knight, who's been incarcerated since 2015 for vehicular manslaughter, and Dwayne Keefe D. Davis, Orlando Anderson's uncle, member of the Southside Compton Crips, who also happened to know Suge Knight since they were 7 or 8 years old.
Oh.
In October of 2011, Greg Kading, a former LAPD detective who worked on Biggie's case because he was murdered in LA, he published a book called Murder Rap, The Untold Story of the Biggie Smalls and Tupac Shakur Murder Investigations by the Detective Who Solved Both Cases. Too long. Too long. Also, presumptuous?
Yeah, a bit.
Maybe. But in the book, he alleged that Davis had been offered $1 million to kill both Shakur and Knight by Sean Combs.
Yeah.
Which, removing one pin, that is my mom's theory.
Okay.
Of, like, when she first told me that she had a theory about who did it, I was like, okay. And then she was like, I think Diddy had something to do with it. And I was like, oh. Uh-oh.
I mean, from everything, everything that's that checks out.
Yeah. So, yikes.
But that dude's so filthy rich, he'll buy his way out of any conviction.
In 2018, Davis revealed that he had been involved in Tupac's murder. And in his 2019 memoir, he stated that it was his gun that had been used to commit the crime.
But he didn't pull the trigger?
No, he was in the car. I believe he was in the front passenger seat.
Okay.
There were four people in the car. One was his nephew. Mm. So in July of 2023... just a couple months ago, the Las Vegas PD executed a search warrant for Davis's Henderson, Nevada home. And on September 29th, 2023, he was arrested in connection with the murder of Tupac Shakur.
This is just over 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yikes. In a statement, Homicide Lieutenant Jason Johansson said that, quote, Dwayne Davis was the shot caller for this group of individuals that committed this crime, and he orchestrated the plan that was carried out. During the grand jury hearing, a member of the Southside Compton Crips stated that Davis's nephew, Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, hadn't been the one to shoot Tupac, but that it had actually been a man named DeAndre Big Dre Smith, saying, quote, when Davis passed the firearm to Orlando, Orlando didn't have a clear shot. Big Dre is 6'6". At this time, he's 370, 400 pounds. He's big. And you're not going to be able to lean over a big guy like that, and you're not going to reach over like that because the shells would have been popping all in Big Dre's face and all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
He can't bend down or anything. He's too big. End quote. When asked to confirm that Smith, who died in 2004, had been the shooter, the witness stated, quote, he did the shooting.
Okay.
The alleged driver, Terrence Bubble Up Brown, died in a 2015 shooting, leaving Davis the last surviving member of the men in the car that killed Tupac Shakur.
So he's literally the only person that can be trusted.
Yep. Davis was indicted on one count of murder with a deadly weapon, with the grand jury voting to, quote, add a sentencing enhancement to the murder charge for gang activity, which could potentially add another 20 years onto whatever sentence he receives, should he be convicted.
Right.
When asked if he'd testify in the trial, Suge Knight told TMZ's Harvey Levin, I wouldn't be on the stand to testify for somebody for what? 1,000% I wouldn't go. I wouldn't testify. None of that shit. Knight weighed in on Davis's arrest, telling Levin, quote, I didn't think Keefe D would ever get arrested, nor do I want to see him get arrested. Me and Keefe D played on the same football team, and whatever the circumstances, if he did have involvement, or if he didn't have involvement in anything, I wouldn't wish someone going to prison on my worst enemy.
What a fucking turd.
Yeah. There's so much.
I know.
So much.
I know.
And I didn't write it down.
We're already over 2 hours.
I'm not shocked at all. But this all came from, like, an interview back in 2011 when Davis was like, I was there. It was my gun. I did not shoot him, but I was there. And apparently at the time, he made a deal, I believe, with the feds. So anything said, you know, he's protected, which may affect the case now, but whatever agreement they made, from what I am understanding, only pertains to what was said that day, not anything else outside of it, because he's been running his mouth publicly about this for a long time. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Of the arrest, Tupac's sister said, quote, "This is no doubt a pivotal moment. The silence of the past 27 years surrounding this case has spoken loudly in our community. It's important to me that the world, the country, the justice system, and our people acknowledge the gravity of the passing of this man, my brother, my mother's son, my father's son. His life and death matters and should not go unsolved or unrecognized, so yes, today is a victory. But I will reserve judgment until all the facts and legal proceedings are complete. There have been multiple hands involved, and there remains so much surrounding the life and death of my brother, Tupac, and our Shakur family overall. We are seeking real justice on all fronts." Which is fucking fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
"As of now, Davis is awaiting sentencing. Sean Combs continues to deny any involvement in Tupac's death, telling LA Weekly that Davis's claims are, quote, pure fiction and completely ridiculous. I guess we'll see about that."
Dude.
I'll keep everyone updated as more information comes in, and until then, keep your head up. And that is the crazy life and untimely death of Tupac Amaru Shakur.
God damn, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see why that one was tough to do.
Oh, yeah. And that's not even all of it.
No, I know.
Like, there's so much I left out.
I know.
But goddamn. Goddamn.
I'm surprised you didn't need help.
I am, too, to be honest. I actually said in the group, on the squad page, I was like, am I going to cry? Maybe. Can I tell you why? No. But everything makes me cry, so it's hard to say.
You got real close.
I fucking did.
You got real close.
I really fucking did. Now for 869.
Yes. Yeah, list them off.
Sources.
Yeah.
EW.com, Sydney Buxbaum, and Emlyn Travis, two different articles. Revolt.tv, Ralph Bristout, John Powell. MTV.com, Mowuse Zigbe from June 2010, and Rob Markman. CNN.com, Ryan Reed, Lisa Respers France. By the way, these are all separate articles.
Yeah.
KQED.org, Gabe Moline. Vice.com, Ben Westhoff. Time.com, Santi Elijah Hawley. NME.com, Kyan Sean Williams. Tupac.com, IMDb.com, ABC7.com, Rio Yamat and Ken Ritter. SFGate.com, Tori Minton, archived piece for the Charlotte, or the Chronicle North Bay Bureau, November 3rd, 95. WBALTV.com, Rio Yamat and Ken Ritter. Ranker.com, Rachel Collar and Brandon Peters. TimePath.co, LATimes.com, Chuck Phillips, archived from October 25th, 95. XXLMag.com, staff articles. APnews.com, Rio Yamat and Ken Ritter. Wikipedia, so many Wikipedias. LAWeekly.com, Simone Wilson. VanityFair.com, Robert Sam Anson. BlackPass.org, Elwood Watson. Billboard.com, Paul Grain. TheThings.com, Rayfly Gilang. Britannica.com, Michael Ray. Biography.com, TupacLegacy.net. Comrade Z, another article. It was an archived Vibe article by Kevin Powell from April of 95, and then a staff article. Findagrave.com, Donald Grayfield. 8newsnow.com, David Charnes, RollingStone.com, Christopher R. Weingarten, Kevin Powell, abcnews.go.com, Meredith DeLiso, encyclopedia.com, chicagotribune.com, Cox News Service was the source listed as the writer of that article.
Okay.
From January of 2005, businessinsider.com, John Lynch, blackenterprise.com, Cedric Big Ted Thornton, hiphopscriptures.com, allthat'sinteresting.com, Genevieve Carlton, veronicachambers.com, Veronica Chambers for Esquire magazine from December of 96, beatsrhymeslists.com, MC Wordweaver, famousafricanamericans.org, thesun.co.uk, Emma Perry and James Desborough, Nia.com, Sravats Lakshman, and the Evidence Locker podcast, episode 4, The Shooting of Tupac Shakur, told by Noel Vinson.
All right. We did it. You did it.
Everybody,
go. You need sleep, so let's...
I need to use the sleep.
Yeah, let's power through this part.
Everybody, go fucking listen to some Tupac after this.
Go, please. Watch some documentaries.
Watch some documentaries. Do the things. There is a movie that came out about him, but it was not signed off on by Afeni Shakur, and she ended up suing her attorney about it.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Ice Cube is planning on making a part 2 of Straight Outta Compton about Tupac.
Oh, I was unaware.
Yeah, I remember that being announced, or at least talked about shortly after Straight Outta Compton, like, got the success that it got, that he wanted to do one about Tupac. In fact,
maybe.
I'm going to look it up real quick. All right.
But yeah, go listen to his music, make a donation to the Tupac Amaru Shakur Foundation if you feel so inclined or if you are able. Support your local community and the arts, especially. Maybe listen to some Shakespeare. You know, definitely check out Vincent by Don McLean.
God damn, he was good looking.
Don McLean?
Yes.
I knew you meant Tupac. But yes, he was.
Okay. In the very, very quick search that I did, I'm not really getting much. Okay. So,
well, we can backhoe it.
Yeah, Tupac. I know that Tupac was in Straight Outta Compton as kind of like an in passing character, as was like Snoop and I think B.I.G. But anyway, we'll backhoe that next week.
We'll look into it and we'll backhoe it. But yeah, so that was the too short life of Tupac Shakur.
And you guys, even though you opted for a one long episode.
You sure fucking did.
Technically, you did get a two-parter.
Kinda.
Yeah.
You'll have to listen to it in two parts.
Well, no, because Dee did hers last week.
Oh, yeah, kinda.
Yeah, we just split you guys into 2 weeks. She's out of town, that's why she's not here.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we done it.
We did done do it.
Yeah. So y'all know the drill, rate, review, subscribe, share. If you'd like some exclusive motherfucking content, go become a patron on our little patron.
Yeah. That's all I got. Hats off to the fuck you club.
Well, let's do the other part. We're going to do it properly.
Which other part? Do you have the kids history podcast to share about?
No. Until next time, y'all.
Oh, well, yeah. Until next time, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all.
Hexes and hoes, y'all. Bye. Bye. Mwah! Oh, God.
Hats off to the Fuck You Club.
Yeah.
And our newest inductee into the Fuck You Club, Steve?
Steven. Fuck you.
Steven, go fuck yourself.
You fucking fuck.
You fuck you. Fuck everything about you.
Yeah.
I hope you eat a steaming pile of shit and then live a little while to deal with it.
Yeah. And then go back for seconds.
Go back for seconds.
Yep.
Fuck you and everything about you.
Yes.
And while we're at it, fuck you, Ted.
Always fuck you, Ted. Gwyneth.
Fuck you.
Keith D. The one who supplied the gun in car.
Fuck you, buddy.
The night Tupac died. Sean Combs.
Fuck you in general.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of a dick.
Because I haven't really heard much about him in a while, and
he did inspire a lot of young black voters to register,
which is
pretty good. Cool.
I will give you that.
He had a great role in It's Always Sunny.
That is true. That is actually my favorite episode of the show. That is my favorite episode because...
Plays Miss, Dr. Jinx.
I fucking love New Kids on the Block. Uh-huh. And that just... His delivery was fucking fantastic. So I will give him that. Those two things. Yes. But I've always wondered if he disappeared because he didn't see his name on a blimp like he said in that song.
Maybe. I mean, he did just vanish.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pretty... He's a producer. Like a pretty... Mm-hmm. Involved producer now, yeah, but he doesn't do any music.
Just in case.
Just in case. If you did do it.
Fuck you.
Mr. Diddy. Fuck you.
Just was something hard in sandpaper. Back to a classic.
Yeah.
There's
nobody to make cackle, so.
Everybody in that car that night.
Yeah.
They're all already dead.
Yeah, all but one are dead, so.
And Suge Knight. I'd say fuck you, but I'm too scared that you're going to hear this somehow.
Yeah, let's not. Let's not anger.
He's in prison.
I would like to not anger him or any gang he's involved with.
Fucking fair.
Violent as fuck. True. So.
But in my head, I just pictured him hearing this and then bursting through a prison wall like the Kool-Aid man. There it is.